Welcome to the Accelerating Operational Performance Podcast. I'm Greg Schenkel, your host, and today I've got another great guest. Remember, our whole goal in doing these podcasts is to really learn from people who've been there and done that and give you some success principles and hints that you can use to further your career, accelerate some of the project initiatives that you've got going. And we truly believe that employee value and engagement comes from knowing how they add value to the business. And so really excited by all our guests, and today's guest is no different. So I'm thrilled to introduce today Phil Tocco. Phil is an experienced supply chain and manufacturing leader who has held prestigious titles over the past 15 years, including manufacturing team leader, lean continuous improvement leader, facility manager, operations director, and director of manufacturing. Phil's experience spans across medical device manufacturing and consumer products, adding depth to his extensive experience. Known for his people-centered leadership and expertise in root cause and analytics, Phil has driven transformational change throughout his career. He provides leadership vision and functional direction to implement focused improvements in performance using lean techniques and good leadership principles. I think there's much for us to learn from his wealth of experience in supply chain management and manufacturing leadership. So join me in welcoming Phil Tocco to the podcast. Phil, welcome.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
So Phil, you and I, our paths have crossed a few different times. And so, of course, I thank you for the fact that you do think of us to bring us in. We're really interested in knowing that there's much to be gained from both successes and setbacks. I want to start on the good news side. And I'm just curious, when you think of a success, could be a project success, a team-based success, something you were working on your own, what kind of comes to mind? What's something that you're particularly proud of, and what do you think contributed to its success?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the ones that come to mind is the site that I was leading last in manufacturing. Had an amazing transformation. And walking into that role with the team, several of the core metrics that we had were below target, and the site was in real need of turnaround in many areas. And the key success that I've seen with that site, and that I had the privilege to lead, was around going after the root causes of all these various problems and bringing the people in the workforce along for the journey, in both establishing the vision, understanding the root causes, and then ultimately aligning on a roadmap to get us to where we are, you know, best in class. And really awesome to see over the course of a 5-year journey how much has changed for the better and how much it's sustaining. So that's one that really jumps out to me is that transformation of
that site. Yeah, that's a big win. And I got to see some of the evidence of that when we were doing some work together. I always like to then go to the flip side of it. And I know it's kind of like if there's a job interview and they ask you to talk about something you weren't good at, and there's always trying to make a positive spin. I still prefer that people are transparent about the things that they struggled with and what they gained from it, because usually you still gain something. And I just wondered for you, what was a project that started to go sideways, and what did you learn from it?
Yeah. So we had, at a prior company I worked at, Kimberly-Clark, invested significantly in consulting services for an OPEX, operational excellence transformation across our entire manufacturing footprint. And I was played a core role on that team, leading that transformation. The goal of that was to implement operational excellence, ultimately to do it in a way that's sustained, because this investment was so significant from the organization. So there was a lot of pressure on delivering both short-term immediate results, but also not letting this be a flavor of the month. We ended up finding ourselves with mixed results at the end of implementation. And there was quite a bit of reflection needed, and we did exactly that. What is it about the project, this implementation, that isn't getting its full potential? And we we did root cause problem solving. We got our, you know, our core team together, and we broke out what's not working well, and then ultimately dug into why. Why isn't it working well? One of the aha moments in that project, going through this, I'll call check and adjust, is understanding that we weren't true to the standardization aspect, that we went too fast and implemented like a shotgun approach across right. the organization at multiple sites, and ended up not letting the people that need to own that process really understand and have a voice in creating it as it's expected to be a new standard. So we actually, to the surprise of our senior leadership, asked to put the whole project on hold. And when they're spending millions on this shiny new object and we're saying it's not working, we need to pause it, we need to stop rolling this out. It came with a lot of stakeholder management and helping them get the conviction.
I can imagine. But you know what? As you know, there's a great deal of credibility and trust that comes from that too.
Yep.
Now, knowing that you have this depth of knowledge in lean, and lately we've been doing a bit more work. We're not lean consultants per se, but we really want to help middle and senior leaders understand what it really takes to accelerate operational performance. In fact, we have this model called the Operational Performance Accelerator Model. But I'm curious, given that you're a practitioner, you've been on the floor and done these things, what do you see in the projects that bear the most fruit from a sustainability standpoint, in terms of, you know, they don't just sort of get the low-hanging fruit and end? What have you noticed are those ingredients? And even maybe on this project where you paused it and regrouped, what are the ingredients people should be looking for to get real sustainable value from lean, given that so many have the ups and downs of, you know, you get a little bit of success and then people forget to keep doing the right things?
Yeah, hands down, it's the people owning the work that will be doing it day in and day out after the initiative, project, support ends, making sure that they are part of that journey of not only developing it, but continuously improving it, and really allowing time and investing in the time for change management to help them understand why, to help them put them at ease, and to really start a movement where the people that are going to own it in the long run are excited for the vision, they understand the vision, they have the tools they need to sustain and the capability built. And then lastly, just making sure that we have the reinforcements in place to make sure it's sustaining. So whether right. that's, you know, a Gemba, you know, cadence, or, you know, audits or report outs or whatnot, it really helps make sure that whatever you're doing within lean or operational excellence is sustaining.
So I want to reinforce the people aspect is
crucial. It's really the only
I want to reinforce this, because I think especially when a company sort of engages outside consultants and help, and you're spending a lot of both time, money, and energy on it, I still think a lot of companies view this as being another top-down, you know, we're going to institute a bunch of tools, but we're still going to basically have managers asking or deciding how it's going and providing feedback. And what you're really saying is the true lean is where the supervisor, the department, actually owns the results of that team, that department. They report on it. They tell you what they're working on, how they perform today. So for any companies that are in that lean journey and you're still sort of having management go around and decide whether it's going well, just consider how you can help the supervisor or the team leaders actually own the results in their department, and they report out on how it's going. And so if you're not getting to that point, you're probably going to have the whenever management's attention gets distracted, you're just going to see it sag again. Whereas if it's these folks are running the business, our job is to listen to them, support them, provide them with tools and resources. So thank you for reinforcing that. One of the questions I had added to the list is this idea of people get to a point in their career when they really finally feel like they've got it, that they have confidence. And I think with people earlier in their career, they sometimes don't feel like, I'm not sure I'm really that good at what I'm doing, or I'm not sure I'm confident. And so my question to you, Phil, is at what point in your career did it finally click for you that you were in the right spot with the right talents at the right time?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really think back to my first leadership assignment as a supervisor in manufacturing. So I had, at the time, no manufacturing experience. It was all supply chain logistics, so mostly working in administrative office buildings, supporting the manufacturing sites. But I took a supervisor role in a manufacturing site and fell in love with it. So it really, for me, solidified the need I have as a, you know, for my work satisfaction to lead and influence people. And partnered with that is to solve problems and drive continuous improvement, and no better role to explore that than a entry-level supervisor role, right, in manufacturing. So yeah, that role really, I remember the first day on the job, I walked in, there was a core team meeting, the daily core team meeting, and there was a decision that needed to be made on the plan for the day, and the team was at odds, and the line leader looked at me and said, "Well, boss, what do you want to do?" And I remember feeling the gravity of that wow, my voice really matters, and it will influence a whole team, and the responsibility that comes with that was quite eye-opening for me, but it was a match.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate for that early experience.
Because you've been a practitioner, therefore you have a lot of the tools, skills with, say, Lean and Continuous Improvement 5S. When did you click that it was actually a people thing more than a tool thing? And like early on, when you first learned the tools, did you see the tools as being the thing? And then when did you determine it's the people? Or did you just know that because of the way you were indoctrinated into them?
No, I didn't know that. I had read, you know, books on Lean and whatnot, but I didn't experience it until, you know, this first leadership role. By my background, I'm a supply chain business, you know, came up through that rank, and yeah. I was not able to rely on the technical skills I've gained, like most supervisors in my past that have come in through engineering, yeah. Or maybe worked their way up from a frontline job. By default in that leadership role, I had to rely on leveraging the skills of the people in the workforce, right, asking them questions and trusting their advice. I will say through my leadership journey, I've learned that in order to drive true sustainable change, you have to have this like bubble of the people, the mindsets, behaviors, capabilities, and treat that as equally as you would an operating system with the machine parts and, you know, the OEE or whatever performance metrics that you come with it. When you have balance between the two, that's when the real power happens.
Right. So I think it's great for anybody who's like, because Phil used the word shiny object, you know, earlier on to talk about how we view these things. And sometimes when you see the tools, you just love the tools until you realize that people have to do it. But there's something else that Phil said that I think is important. And that is that if you have a lot of knowledge yourself, the danger is you probably tend to oversteer. And so because Phil acknowledged that he didn't have that knowledge, he actually had to rely on the people, which is probably the thing you'd want to do anyway, is to empower the people.
Right.
And the other thing I'd say is sometimes if you're not confident enough, people are wary when you ask them for their help. So they sense your genuineness, that you're actually curious and you actually do need their help. Otherwise, they feel you're just using it as a technique. So I think, Phil, you mastered that.
Right.
The one other go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to add, you made me think of something, a phrase I use quite often when I'm engaging with people, workforce at the Gemba is, "Hey, I'm just coming from a place of curiosity with this question." Yeah. And it's genuine. It is, but I think that puts people at ease and really allows them to feel empowered.
Well, you're being explicit about your intent, which never hurts,
yep,
right? The other area that's been fascinating me lately is, you know, organizations are complex. They have multiple functions and departments and focuses, and they have metrics at the very top level, and then they try to break them down by function. But what I've noticed is over time, because everyone wants to do a good job and they have their metric that they're chasing, but I've seen that sometimes that starts to cause a distortion where the departments aren't always lined up, or they almost have differing incentives. And I wondered, first of all, have you noticed that, or have you seen an example of that kind of where it starts to go sideways, and maybe how to get it back into alignment? Have you seen both sides of that, and could you comment on that?
Every day, Greg. Competing objectives. First off, I want to acknowledge that I do think there's health in having competing objectives and creating a culture of creative, where you can have creative tension and a foundation of trust. So having those isn't always a bad thing. Sometimes it's good to embrace that. That said, I have certainly experienced situations where competing objectives are unhealthy, driving siloed siloed work performance creating waste. One of the things that we talked about earlier in this discussion was driving lean improvement or whatever project from the bottoms up, and how important that is. I will add to that, it's equally important to have top-down leadership saying it's important, it's a priority, and we have immovable expectations that we're going to deliver X, Y, or Z. When you have that balance of the top down saying it's a critical focus to support this one, two, or three, metrics, whatever those are, and expect that for the entire organization or team, I've seen so much success with that, because we always can go back to, well, our leadership is saying that this is a priority. So to have the top down driving the focus and alignment on what the priorities are, then utilizing the bottom, the frontline team, if you will, to really create the sustainable systems and problem solves, I think for me has been the secret sauce. But there's great, examples I have where we've had that top down, alignment where the entire organization's rallied around one metric. And then, of course, there's always, the daily discussions, I'll call them, on competing objectives.
Yeah. And you know what?
I think it, in many ways, it's a healthy part of, an organization.
It's a good point to say that even when we're teaching managing conflict, it's not that you're trying to avoid the conflict. It's that you're just trying to harness the positives of people having different points of view and different perspectives and different Right. levels of experience and knowledge, and try to bring the best out of all that. So it's okay to have Yes. a little bit of tension around that. When I think a lot of people get confused between soft skills and hard skills, and, what difference leadership makes. I had one client say, well, how do you know that making better leaders will drive better performance? And of course, I turn it right back on them and say, well, you have different divisions and different departments. Let me ask you, what do you think leadership does in terms of performance? But there does still seem to be this uncertainty between like operational excellence and leadership. And I didn't know whether you've got a take on how does either strong or weak leadership actually link to some outcomes in terms of business performance. Have you developed some connections in your mind on that?
Yeah. One thing that comes to mind, and it's actually linked to our first time working together years ago. This was part of this umbrella of, operational excellence transformation for our large organization. We were digging into why we were having such not only poor engagement survey results, but metrics that weren't driving the change, the results, the productivity improvements that we needed at the pace we need it. So we had really dug into the causes of that and gave credence to the culture and the people and what they were saying. The paradigm shift that we had is that the investments we make in our leadership tends to be at the senior level, the managerial level, the salary level, if you will, hoping that that trickles down or expecting it to trickle down. But when you really think about what drives the where the value add is, it's our frontline teams and their direct leadership, which typically are, you know, the frontline leaders that are, you know, promoted from within and from the line and that aren't considered in that salary rank. They get, in my experience, in the organizations I've worked, the least amount of investment in capability building. And so much of one person's day that is directly involved in the value add, that's making product that is driving value, so much of their day can be ruined or made better by their direct leadership. And understanding that that direct leadership can really make or break a team's culture and performance and really give them the tools they need to succeed and the mindset they need to succeed, and also the confidence to drive accountability and sustain these new systems, lean systems, we realized it was really worth the investment in this group of leaders that had been candidly undernurtured in the past.
It's a good point. And you know, as you know, our focus is really on those frontline leaders, because people probably still don't think, they think of culture as being this big thing in the organization level, very high level, but you just actually even said the word culture on a team. So there's all these subcultures, and anyone listening can also think about whether they're subculture in their team, what it's like to work in your department versus another department and so forth. I think that for most frontline workers, they only know the culture through their interactions with maybe their immediate leader, and maybe to some degree less so to their leader's leader, and maybe to their leader's leader's leader. But for most people, the culture is really defined by their day-to-day routine.
Right.
You did bring value, and I loved how you said that, like, the value is created at the front line. That's what people always should remember, is the people adding value to the work task. So everybody else's job is really to support them in doing that. But that being said, I've seen in some companies that people don't understand the value that they bring. I wasn't sure whether you had a case where, like, people often just get in the routine of doing their jobs and nobody really articulates the value that they're creating. Have you seen the opposite of that, where people do understand the value that they're bringing to the organization, to the customer, to the next operation? Can you talk about that for a moment?
Yeah. First off, I agree that if you're not investing in the time to explain, you know, fundamental lean principles of, you know, where the value add is, early on in an employee's journey, you're missing out on that opportunity to help them understand the gravity of how important the Gemba is and where people are assembling parts and products. We as part of our deployment of OpEx in this transformation that I had talked about earlier, one of the paradigm shifts that we received from the consulting company that we hired to help us with was really looking at the paradigm shift of driving top-down decision-making and performance from bottoms up, in flipping that paradigm. We ultimately saw the employee base not only hear from the senior leaders, but see through actions that they are the most important people in the site. We cannot perform for 1 minute making product for the customer without the assemblers and the frontline team. We can go months without senior leaders and managers, you know,
and often
weeks.
Right.
So having our senior leaders educated on that and then start to speak it when they're at the Gemba or interacting on town halls around the importance of the frontline team and how they give credence to their concerns and invest in them, I think really drove phenomenal results.
Yeah. And Phil's been using the Gemba term, for anybody, I mean, most people do understand it if they've been in manufacturing for a while, but G-M-B-A, Gemba, it's really just a short form to say go and see. So go and see has two different sort of values from it. One is it gives you eyes on whatever the situation is, but it also gives attention to the people who need your attention because you are there with them. And so any leader who's tempted to try to manage things from their desktop or their laptop screen is missing a chance just to interact, to see what's really going on, but it's not just investigative, because sometimes you can maybe get good enough where you don't need to go and see, but going and seeing also adds value to the people who are there, because they know that you're going to interact with them and ask them how they see things running, and that's part of building a successful team. Phil, one more, I'll do one more, and then if you have something you want to add, you can do that. But sure. My last question to you off my sheet today is really around advice you'd give to somebody who's maybe earlier on in their career, but still interested in operational leadership. They could be a younger engineer, they could be a younger production supervisor or team leader, but they might aspire in their path to think about what would it take to become a plant manager or a director of operations or something like that. What would you reinforce to that person as some advice?
So a couple of things come to mind. The first one is, and I'm speaking from my experience in my journey, is I was very much wanting to fast forward the journey and just get there as quick as possible. And I remember, talking with my mentor at the time and saying, I kept pushing, like, you know, when can I get this promotion, or when can I take this assignment to get to the next level? This is before I went into site leadership. Mm-hmm. And he asked me when I intend to retire, and I told him the age, and he asked me how old I was. And then he said, you have 39 years in between, you know, from now until then. What are you going to do for 39 years? And I, when you put that into perspective, I wasn't even 30 at the time. So his advice to me, and it was so dead on, is do invest in horizontal moves where you're going to learn different functions, maybe at the same level. Sometimes those pay off double, where I found that the experience I gained going from a lateral, from planning into a lateral into supervision in manufacturing, you know, paid off in a double promotion. And if that doesn't happen for you, I just want maybe the younger audience or people earlier in their career to know that each individual role you have, each individual organization, company you work for, will bring so much wealth to your longer term journey and build that foundation, and enjoy the ride as much as you can, and try to think about the big picture. Yeah. Because it's all part of the journey of learning and growing and developing. Don't try to rush through it.
Yeah, I think human beings are so much in anticipation mode of the next thing, they forget to really think about what you're doing right now, how you can add the most value and learn from it. So I think that's good advice. It always sounds like when more seasoned people, and you're younger than I am, I believe. So I think it always sounds weird when more seasoned people say, you know, slow your roll a little bit and enjoy some of this, and realize that there's something to be gained, even if you're, you know, you're thinking about your next vertical move. Think about your horizontal move, right? So,
And don't, that, just real quick. One other thing too is don't judge yourself based off your peers. You know, they're going on a different pace and a different journey, and really focus on yourself.
That's a very good thing to do, because you don't know what other people's journeys are on and whether that's actually the right thing for them to do, right? If they're not totally confident and equipped for that next part. I think excellence gets noticed and rewarded. Any last thoughts that you want to share for anyone who might be just looking for tips on moving things forward, and both in their career, but also just getting better results in whatever their current responsibilities are?
Yeah, if there's any one thing that I would just reflect on is being the most important or paying off most significantly as I have approached different projects and problems in the past, is really taking the time up front to understand the root cause. Even though there's tremendous pressure to deliver a solution as fast as you can, or maybe there's a deadline that you have to hit, but you're not going through the proper approach and the time you need to really understand root cause. Most oftentimes, you're going to have to do that anyway, because your hypothesis or your plan's just not going to deliver the results, because you're not really digging at and understanding the root cause. So, you know, take the time to invest up front and really think through it.
Awesome. Great words of advice. So Again, if you want to connect with Phil Tocco and T-O-C-C-O, you can look him up on LinkedIn at Philip Tocco, and I'm sure he'd love to connect with you. And of course, if you want any information, as you know, as mentioned, we've done work with Phil in his various roles that he's had. If your organization would benefit from any of that, of course, you can visit us at uniquedevelopment.com. Again, we just want to wish you all the best of success to understand the mix of the human dynamic with the tools that you have for improvement. That's really how you accelerate operational performance, and that's how you leave a legacy of leadership and success behind you. So, Philip, thank you for being our guest today on the Accelerating Operational Performance podcast. And for that, I'll say we'll see you next time.
Thank you.